Stuart Levitt and others are calling for an independent review of the DPP's findings in order that the case be brought to trial. 2 years ago, Mulurungi's death led to riots on the island. There are now real concerns that if justice is not seen to be done, Indigenous Australians will only feel further alienated from the law, which could prompt some to take matters into their own hands. This is Erica Vowles in Sydney, reporting for FSRN.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News from KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm Ada Bogado.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. Well, I'm sorry. For some reason, I was in delay. Okay, there we go. It's WBAI New York, 7 o'clock time, once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, Bomb Billy Bow.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. And joining us this evening, let's see, we have Bernie Hess down there in Philadelphia.
Good evening.
Mike over here in New York.
Hi.
Redbird.
Good evening.
Arseny.
Hey there.
Jim.
Merry Christmas.
And over in the corner is not Kevin.
Yeah, hello.
And this is our holiday show. Didn't know that, did you? It's our annual holiday show, so we're going to be focusing on holiday-type issues. And I guess the question we're asked most at this time of year is what an appropriate tip is for your telephone company. How much do you leave for them?
15 to 20%, of course.
No, that's too much. I generally slip a $50 bill in each of my phone bills. I mean,
pay for your bill, or?
What's that?
You put the money in to pay for the bill?
Well, no, that's not how tips work. Do you understand the concept of tips? When somebody gives you service, it doesn't have to be good service. It just has to be service. You give them a little handout at the end of the year, and since I have several, I have Verizon Wireless. I treat Verizon Wireless and Verizon as two separate companies because, you know, I have the landlines and I have the wireless, but then I also have T-Mobile. I have a company called Trinsic. I have another company called Primos, and there's a whole bunch, really. And it does cost a lot, but the question we get is how much is appropriate. And I think about $50 is good for.
Now, what happens when it gets to the other end? They just put it all into one big pool and distribute it among.
No, I imagine the representative who processes my account.
Just grabs it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's who I'm sending it to, the person who is responsible.
It's a tip. What if you ask them for money? Because, like, they probably screwed you over so many times. You deserve the money.
Well. For what they give me in return, can you really put a dollar amount on that?
You just did, $50.
Okay, well, I did. All right, but can you? I'm asking, can you? Bernie, how much do you tip your phone? You have Sprint, right? How much do you tip them?
I am remiss, I have to say. I would like to I'll donate to them any money that they've already overcharged me. It's not worth my going after, so I'll just throw in the towel and say they can have that as a tip.
I think we have Ebenezer Scrooge on the phone line here. It doesn't sound like you're in the holiday spirit at all. This is the season to be giving, Bernie, and so it doesn't sound like you're giving to your phone company.
Wait, you only tip the phone company in December?
Well, that's when you're supposed to tip them.
I thought all year round they're providing you service all year round.
No, but you only tip them at the end of the year. Am I the only one who understands the holidays? You wait until the end of the year, and then all those people who mean so much to you, you give them a little bit extra. And why should the phone company is corporations are like people, as per the documentary.
Corporations are people in the United States.
Okay,
law.
I'm sorry. And if any corporations are offended by my remarks, please don't write letters because I'm sorry already. Yes, so you should treat them as you would treat people, hopefully better.
Well, they're a lot more powerful than people.
Yeah, that's why, hopefully better. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm not tipping enough. Is that the consensus here?
It's hard to say.
Well, maybe our listeners can tell us what they tip their phone companies. They send you nice greeting cards, after all. They wish you happy holidays.
Mine doesn't.
Really?
No.
How much did you tip them last year?
Obviously not enough.
Yeah, well, maybe that's why. Bernie, now, you implied that you have not been tipping your phone company, and your phone company is Sprint PCS, right?
That's right, for like 10 years, well, 9 years now.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your service?
Well, there's two things. There's the quality of the actual network service, and there's the quality of the human customer service.
Well, merge them together and come up with a number.
If I were to average them together, I'd give them about between a 6 and a 7.
That's kind of low.
Yeah.
That's kind of low. I actually thought you'd be lower. But I dare say you slip some notes in the bill, and you might see your service. It's just like a superintendent of a building. You know, you don't pay them off. They're not going to collect your garbage.
If a person treated me as well as Sprint PCS, a live person, I would not tip them anything. And I'm a good tipper. I normally tip 20% unless the service is really lousy. So that's why I'm not tipping.
20%. If I tip 20% to the phone company, that's a lot more. You know, I feel guilty now. I don't think I've been tipping them enough. I don't think I've been tipping them enough. And here's an important note to our listeners. If you're tipping your phone company by writing checks, that does not work because they're required by law to apply that to your account. Drop cash in and make sure it's for the the people who process. And a human being is responsible for each account, you know. They take an interest. A lot of people don't know that. They think it's this computerized thing, and it doesn't work like that at all. Yes, Bernie.
That would be a good experiment, actually. I've always wondered, you know, they say don't send cash for the mail, mm-hmm. don't pay your bill with cash. It would be interesting to slip some money, like a 10 or 20 in with your bill sometime, and just see if it gets applied to your account. It would be an expensive experiment, but it would be interesting.
It would also be impossible to prove.
Oh, true. No, you couldn't prove it. You would know to yourself and your friends. You could say, well, I tried this, and this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you know if there's actually thieves at your phone company.
Yeah, that's true. Credit cards, boy. The tips for credit cards are a lot more. That really breaks me this time of year because that's based on a percentage, and it gets into triple digits easily. I hate this time of year because of all the money you got to pour out, but that's the way it goes. Okay, we have some interesting news items that have been taking place. One of the more interesting ones, actually, is something that's been happening today, and that's court case having to do with the FCC and a couple of incidents that have taken place, a couple of years ago, with award ceremonies where certain people receiving awards were so excited that they uttered profanities, and those profanities went out over the airwaves. And Fox has taken this all the way to the U.S. Court of Appeals, the Second Circuit here in New York, and they're having hearings on this. They had a hearing this morning, and C-SPAN was covering it. And what do you think happens when you're covering something about language you can't use on the air in court? Well, that language.
Are you implying what I think you're implying about our beloved C-SPAN?
Well, first of all, I'm implying that in court they use this language, and C-SPAN was covering the court.
C-SPAN?
C-SPAN.
The cable company's gift to America?
Yes, the same. But I should point out, a lot of people don't seem to realize this, including people who run cable networks. The FCC has no jurisdiction. They have no power to stop those networks from airing certain words. That's why it always annoys me so much. There was, I think, Arts and Entertainment recently announced they're going to be airing The Sopranos, but they're going to be doing heavy editing on it to prevent certain words from getting out. They don't have to do that, but yet they feel compelled to for some reason. So C-SPAN today aired the hearing, and yes, those words went out over cable, which is perfectly allowable. What's interesting, though, is that C-SPAN has a radio station. I believe they're in Washington, D.C., and the same words went out over broadcast radio. And according to the FCC, Judge Peter Hall brought up the very issue of whether the FCC might fine stations for airing the dirty language used in the hearing. The commission has emphasized it will use great restraint and would not fine stations for airing the hearing as part of a news program. So, I mean, it seems like we're going around in circles here. Sometimes you get fined for things that get aired over the radio, but then it's defined as news or public affairs of some sort, and it's okay. Jim?
Well, what I've always found fascinating, which is somewhat related to this, is that you can't edit anything from political candidates. So if you buy a commercial, any political candidate could say anything they wanted, including these seven dirty words.
But what political candidate is going to use that as a platform to get elected?
I could think of some moderately outrageous reasons to use it, especially in this past election, where it would actually work. But generally, they would not.
Interesting. So, that's a development. Of course, if that case is overturned, where Fox was fined a huge amount, that might actually be a positive thing as far as freedom of broadcast, people not being so concerned over every single utterance of every single word and who might be offended where. It's kind of scary. Bernie, any feedback on this?
I just wanted to help clarify something. When we're talking about broadcasting, we're talking about things that are actually broadcast over the airwaves without a direct cable into your house. Now, it could be picked up by a cable system over the air and then retransmitted to you via cable. But you slipped and said that C-SPAN aired this over their network when, in fact, it was not aired. It was transmitted over their closed network. The only broadcast that C-SPAN made was over their radio station, which I think is just one station, like you said, in Washington, D.C. So it's very easy to fall into that trap. You say, well, it's on the air, mm-hmm. or it's being broadcast, when, in fact, these are both technical terms in the communications industry. And when you say over the air or on the air or broadcast, they're all referring to things that are not like cable. But then it's even more confusing because satellite is not considered broadcast.
Exactly.
It's considered narrowcast. So it's a whole mess, but it helps if we get our terminology straight to understand what something is on the air or when something is really not on the air but over a cable or satellite.
Well, I'll bet $75, which is my entire tip to C-SPAN this year, that they have – why is everybody laughing? They have an on-air sign in their studio.
Probably.
Yeah, so they're as wrong as me.
So just to clear it up for our listeners, if you're listening to us on the Internet, we're not broadcasting to you. But if you're listening to us on a radio, we are broadcasting to you.
And the fact is we are broadcasting over the radio, so we are bound by all the rules and regulations that on-air people have. Yeah.
So are we podcasting to the online listeners?
All right, your mic's going off.
And, of course, over shortwave, that's a good question. Over shortwave, are we broadcasting?
Yes, Bernie.
That is a very good question. We are broadcasting, but not under the FCC decency regulations. The shortwave station that we simulcast off the hook on, WVCQ, is an international shortwave station. It's not really licensed to broadcast to American listeners. It's licensed to broadcast to Mexico, and the owners thoughtfully located the station in the state of Maine, and the whole signal covers most of the North America on its way to Mexico. So it just happens to be listenable by most people in the continental United States. But it's not licensed to do that, and that's okay. So WVCQ, or we could use, if we only broadcast over shortwave through that station, we could use all kinds of profanity, and the FCC would have no jurisdiction over that because it's not a domestic broadcast station.
But you know who would have jurisdiction would be our listeners who wouldn't listen to us broadcasting profanity all the time.
And
that's
not.
That's what I believe. And I used this on the other radio show a couple of weeks ago, is use of the N-word, which we don't use here at this station on this radio show, on all the radio shows I'm involved with. And I think that's a decision based on the broadcasters themselves. We're allowed to. We can use the word anytime we want. The FCC doesn't have any objection to it, but we have some taste. Yes, Mike?
I have information from the WBAI news department, which says that FCC did not fine Fox for the Billboard Music Award broadcast. They instead cited Fox. If they had been fined, it wouldn't have made it to court today.
Oh, interesting.
That's all it says.
Okay.
I don't know more.
Well, it's an important case, and I don't know if it was concluded today, if the hearing was finished or if they're going to be continuing it, but certainly was interesting. Jim?
And I have one more question about the FCC and these rules on cursing. What if you curse in a foreign language?
That's a good question, and I think the technical rule is that you are liable, but somebody has to figure it out and complain. And I don't know how in God's name you would know all the different languages.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, French, German, Spanish right. could be obvious, but Mel Gibson and Mayan, you never know.
That's right. Okay, another story from the White House, which was also very interesting. They have a device, apparently. This is sort of a I guess a version of the cell phone jammer. They have a device that can sense if a visitor is carrying a cell phone, according to White House Deputy Chief of Staff Joe Hagan. In the wrong hands, cell phones can be used to listen in on nearby conversations, even when they're not connected, security experts say. Does anybody know what that means exactly? Cell phones can be used to...
I think the implication is that you could just use the cell phone as a sort of portable recorder, but it's not very clear.
Okay. Well, inside the most super secret environment in the White House, that would not be cool. This is according to the Wall Street Journal blog, which I'm loath to read from, but it is an interesting story. With the cell phone sensor turned off, White House officials gave reporters a tour of the new facility, expected to be completed by the end of the year. Located a floor below the West Wing's main offices, it's been getting a top-to-bottom renovation to convert it from a Cold War relic into a state-of-the-art nerve center. It's interesting, though, that they actually have the ability to tell that.
Well, there's a bunch of techniques they can use for that. One of them is just simply to listen for the frequencies that cell phones generally use to connect to the tower, because if there's no cell service, especially if there's no cell service, it happens more frequently, more frequently where your cell phone is actually pinging out and looking for a tower to connect to. So that's probably the easiest way for them to do it. But there's also emulation techniques where they can emulate a tower and do all sorts of cool stuff. But
the claim is that this object can even detect a cell phone which is not transmitting, which makes me think it's more of a microphone detector or something, but it's really very unclear.
Well, isn't any cell phone transmitting all the time? They say the only way to defeat this is to take the battery out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I can turn my cell phone in a mode where it doesn't transmit. I mean, I won't be able to make or receive calls, but it's still on. So I don't know.
All right, Bernie, any ideas on this?
Well, like Redbird just said, it could be listening for transmissions, but it would only be able to listen for those. It would only be able to hear those transmissions if the cell phones happen to be transmitting signals. Now, what you just asked, are the cell phones, even when you're not using them, but they're on, are they still transmitting? Most of the time, not. Otherwise, your battery would die really quickly. But they do register themselves with the network every few seconds, every few minutes, with just a short data burst to say, "Hey, I'm over here. I'm still on the network," just to keep the network connection active. And this system would have to be listening for these occasional data bursts, but it wouldn't be able to do that in real time because your phone isn't transmitting all the time these registration signals. So the only way they could really do this is to set up what I think is a bunch of what are called microcells for each frequency band, the cellular and PCS bands, and all the technologies, like whether it's CDMA or GSM, or even TDMA, some older things, and have all those like mini cell sites in the situation room or the nerve center call for a telephone saying, "Here, this is the closest cell site, register with me," and then it could pick them up. So maybe that's how it works.
Well, in a somewhat related story, this has been making the rounds. This was reported on ABC. A recent court ruling in a case against the Genovese crime family revealed that the FBI has the ability from a remote location to activate a cell phone and turn its microphone into a listening device that transmits to an FBI listening post. It's a method known as a roving bug. And once again, experts say the only way to defeat it is to remove the cell phone battery. The FBI can access cell phones and modify them remotely without ever having to physically handle them. This is according to James Atkinson, a counterintelligence security consultant. Any recently manufactured cell phone has a built-in tracking device which can allow eavesdroppers to pinpoint someone's location to within just a few feet. Now, according to the recent court ruling by U.S. District Court Judge Lewis Kaplan, the device functioned whether the phone was powered on or off, intercepting conversations within its range wherever it happened to be. This sounds like science fiction to me.
It sounds very strange, and I can't really think of a lot of situations where that would be possible with you know, standard cell phones that you would buy off the shelf. But if it were possible to modify the firmware of the cell phone remotely, which is maybe what this is referring to, and have it seem like it's off when it's not actually off, because obviously if it's transmitting audio, it's not actually off, then maybe it's possible. Maybe it's possible to trick the user into thinking that it's, you know, his or her cell phone is actually off when it's not. But you know, either way, you're always trackable when your cell phone's on. So the safest bet is to just remove the battery.
These roving bugs were approved by a judge after the more conventional bugs planted at specified locations were discovered by members of the crime family, who then started to conduct their business dealings in several additional locations, including more restaurants, cars, a doctor's office, and public streets. Judge Kaplan basically said in his ruling, while a mobile device makes interception easier and less costly to accomplish than a stationary one, this does not mean that it implicated new or different privacy concerns. It simply dispenses with the need for repeated installations and surreptitious entries into buildings. It does not invade zones of privacy that the government could not reach by more conventional means. But what bothers me is that to install a tap on a phone line, you have to have access to that phone line. It sounds like they just have the ability to pick a number and just start tapping that number whenever they feel like it.
They would most likely have to have more access through the cell phone carrier or something to have this ability. But
which means the carrier is able to do this.
Right. It's still unclear how they're actually doing it, whether or not it's a firmware modification or whether or not it's something else, that we don't know about or haven't been thinking about. But it's pretty interesting.
Way back in the early days of phone phreaking, there was this there were constant texts being spread around about something known as an infinity transmitter. Now, you've probably heard of that, Bernie, right?
And REMOBs as well.
REMOBs, yes. These were basically devices that allowed you to call somebody's phone number, and I guess by hitting a key or something like that, you turn their receiver into a microphone that works even when the phone is hung up. And
the term you mentioned, the harmonica bug, actually was the inventor. I think it was a guy named Manny Middleman, of all people. He built a tone decoder, a special tone decoder in a phone bug, and you would call the phone and it would automatically answer, and then if you blew a certain note in a harmonica, it would activate it and then transmit everything going on in the room over the phone line to the listener, who could be anywhere in the world.
There's a great demonstration of that in the movie The Conversation with Gene Hackman. It's well worth seeing for anybody interested in these kind of surveillance issues, but it remains to this day thought of as fiction as far as the actual harmonica bug, infinity transmitter, REMOB, whatever it is that you wish to call it. And I have to wonder, is this fiction we're dealing with here now as well with the cell phones?
It seems a lot more technically possible than maybe it would have been, however many years ago you're referring to. But it does seem like it is something that might be possible if, like I mentioned, it was possible to do a firmware upgrade remotely or something of that nature.
And there's no reason the FBI or whatever law enforcement agency is involved. They have unlimited budgets, basically. They could actually emulate your cell phone carrier and make your phone think it's talking to your carrier when, in fact, it's talking to their system. Mm-hmm. And then they could initiate the firmware upgrade with the spoofware that spoofs the phone's behavior into making you think that it's operating one way when, in fact, it's transmitting all your audio around your phone's mic to them.
Well, also sort of related to this, something out of England. Of course, England has a lot of surveillance issues going on. But basically, CCTV cameras in the UK are supposed to be fitted with microphones now, in case they don't already have microphones. And these microphones are going to be listening for aggressive tones. Yeah, as if the wall-to-wall cameras weren't frightening enough, our listener Dave in London writes, having your street conversations eavesdropped on and recorded is utterly terrifying. I don't know if it's utterly terrifying. I'm used to people listening in on things that you say in public anyway, but the fact that they are able to listen for aggressive tones, I'm kind of curious as to what exactly is implied
there.
What
do they do if they detect an aggressive tone?
Can't they yell at you?
Tone?
They can yell at you, right?
They can, yeah, the cameras have speakers of their own. They can yell at you if you jump up on a statue or something like that. But, yeah, what are they going to do if they hear an aggressive tone?
I mean, there's nothing illegal about using an aggressive tone.
Apparently not yet, but maybe once they finish installing all these, there will be. We urge our listeners over in the UK, if you see a surveillance camera, yell at it. Say something angry to it. Yeah, aggressively. And just or maybe yell at somebody else, because maybe that'll confuse them even more. Wow, it's really turning into an interesting place all around. Now, we've all heard the stories in the past few days, past couple of weeks, about the tragedies in the Pacific Northwest. One family driving off a road and being stranded in the snow and not being able to reach anybody. The climbers on Mount Hood being stranded and not being able to reach anybody. Although one person was able to make a cell phone call out to alert people that they were they were in fact stranded. Didn't do very much good as far as finding them in time. But I think what this has done is gotten a lot of people kind of determined to be trackable at all times. Imagine if you're on some remote mountaintop someplace, wouldn't you like to be able to reach the rest of the world if you need to? Wouldn't you like them to be able to find you in case you fall down or are unconscious or something like that? And I just I think this is going to be used as a selling point for a lot of these products that allow you to be monitored for your own good, obviously for your own good. But I think it's going to sort of get stuck in our mentality as something that we have to have at all times if we wish to remain safe. And the days of not being tracked will be a distant memory.
Actually, counter to that, after those tragedies, there was a lot of talk about limiting, you know, the ability to mountain climb and do a bunch of that stuff in that area. And a lot of the counter arguments to that were actually, no, you know, the climbers know all the risks and they're fully aware that they could die, and that's fine. That, you know, that's the whole sense of adventure. Of
well, maybe
there, so.
They don't want hundreds of other people to take the same risk to find them when they decide to take that risk. There's also a little bit of animosity as far as that goes, because all these people are out there now trying to track them down. But yeah, it's definitely a topic of concern. Bernie?
There are already emergency transmitters specifically for this purpose that you can buy for not a lot more than a good GPS device. They're called EPIRBs. And interestingly, it's the only project that the U.S. and the Soviet Union collaborated on back during the Cold War, and it has continued to this day. The little VHF transmitters, and now they got rid of the VHF frequency, and now it's a UHF frequency, which are tracked by low-orbiting Earth satellites. And you have to have one of these little transmitters, and you have to like push buttons a certain way so you don't set it off accidentally. And they can pinpoint you fairly accurately with satellites and send out the Coast Guard or whatever agency does the search and rescue. So these things are available. One company, Breitling, a watch manufacturer, has even managed to build one into a wristwatch. And the wristwatch costs like $3,000. But the old frequency, old VHF frequency, was 121.05 megahertz, I believe. Maybe it was 121.5.
Yeah, it's 121.5.
Yeah, but now it's a UHF frequency because there's too much interference at 121.5. So it's a good project. It's a good system. And it doesn't use cell phones or anything else. It's dedicated just for this, for emergencies, and you only need to turn it on when you're in deep trouble.
Well, can you reach this from anywhere in the middle of nowhere? Can you actually get this to work?
The entire planet.
The entire planet. What if you're in a cave?
No.
Ah.
But nothing else will work in a cave either.
Well, then the spelunkers have to be careful, extra careful. All right. I'm somehow on Hillary Clinton's mailing list, her real mailing list. So I get these little brochures and pamphlets every now and then. And this one that I got recently, did you ask your kids what they did online today?
What does Hillary Clinton care if you asked your kids?
I don't know.
You don't have kids,
First of all, she doesn't know that. I don't think that's in the database anywhere.
Why not?
And I don't know. But here's 10 tips on the back to make sure your family is internet smart. And I just feel that we should alert our listeners in the holiday spirit so that the children remain internet smart and safe and all that. And if anybody has any questions or problems with any of these tips, say something. All right. Number one, ask what your kids are doing. Ask your children to show you what they do online and with digital media. Even if they don't show you everything, they will know you are taking an interest, and it will take further steps to hide and use encryption and things like that. All right, I'm embellishing just a slight bit. Number two, internet access is a privilege, not a right. Is that true? Internet access is a privilege, not a right?
For one's kids, yes. For a free and independent adult citizen, no, I don't think so.
It's a right, not a privilege?
Well, it's not a right in the sense that you have the right to...
I don't see it in the Constitution, Jim.
Yes.
I see nothing about internet access.
I'm backing down from rights that are clearly enumerated or clearly derived from the Constitution. But no, it's a right in the sense of the right to copy from a disk is a right, despite what the courts say.
All right. Well, this particular... part here. Establish rules for your family when your children can go online, how much time they can spend online, specific types of sites they may not visit, such as 2600.com, details of what information they may or may not give out online, and expectations concerning responsible use of technologies. Sounds exciting, doesn't it? Number three, MySpace, Friendster, Facebook, Bebo, My Yearbook. What's Bebo?
Bebo.
B-E-B-O. Maybe this is like a
we're too old.
A really clever way to get a new product out there somehow. I don't know what Bebo is, but I'm sure our listeners will tell us. If this sounds like a foreign language, find a tech-savvy friend to help you learn about social networking. There is a good chance your tween or teen... Yes, she said the word tween, has a profile, whether you know it or not, and you should know what it says.
I kind of agree with that. I'm not a big fan of those sites. I mean, I'm a little hypocritical in that I have a Facebook profile, but it's not.
Do you have a Bebo
profile? I don't have Bebo. I don't have MySpace. I don't have...
Do you
Facebook actually comes in handy, I have to say, for locating people in your classes and contacting
people.
What
about
who
the classes?
To...
Isn't that where you locate the people?
Well... Not if you don't live on campus.
If you
it's really
don't go
not
to the classes, yeah. If you just spend all day sleeping it off or something like that, I guess maybe you don't see your friends or classmates. But yeah, Facebook is kind of weird because you get to see the people who are in your school, but you don't really get to see anybody outside your school. So it's sort of segregated.
It's got this weird networking thing. It's actually becoming more broad now, where you can see more people, and there are like regional networks now, and they're constantly adding more things and new ways of contacting people, but. It's useful.
Okay, number four, communication. Encourage your children to come to you if they are approached by a stranger online or come across something inappropriate. Well, they're going to be doing a lot of approaching if they're using the internet and they come to you every time they see something inappropriate. Make it a part of your family rules. And for those of you out there who don't know what those are, make some family rules. Okay, number five, keeping personal information private. No matter how smart your child is, don't assume that he or she knows not to disclose personal information. What may seem obvious to you may not be obvious to your child. Set family rules about disclosing personal information online, such as name, address, school, work, friends, pictures, usernames, or passwords.
Passwords.
I guess you don't want to be giving out the passwords, do you?
Probably
that
not.
Hillary, she's such a spoiled sport.
Well, I think a lot of the kids would get this before the parents do, because I got to tell you, a lot of the parents are giving out information, all sorts of information, without thinking, to the wrong people. Number six, more than just the computer. What does that mean? That's not even a phrase. Number six, more than just the computer. Communication in cyberspace occurs beyond the computer on cell phones, PDAs, and even game consoles. You need to know about the different types of digital media that your child is using and apply safety rules to all of them. Could be satellite phones. Who knows what they're...
Cell phones are still cyberspace?
To these people, they are, yeah. Absolutely. So I guess we're not objecting to anything strenuously, are we? It just seems kind of simplistic. But
I mean, this is pretty good, assuming that the parents actually know like what that means.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they don't know what number seven means. Information permanence. Permanence. I've never used that word in my life, and I've just said it twice.
But you know what it means.
I know what it means, but I've never had reason to.
It's a good word.
Many different ways I could say that and not try to show off my language skills like Hillary Clinton's trying to.
Every week.
Yeah. The internet is forever. Kids should understand that what you post online can come back to haunt you. Everybody needs to understand that. You are not anonymous online. Everything you write in email, yeah, I guess, on a blog, in an IM, as one congressman learned, or even a text message on a cell phone is stored somewhere, even if you delete it. This almost sounds like something we would say. I can't believe a member of the government is warning us about this.
It's true. What was that guy who applied for an investment banking job and sent a video resume and that quickly ended up on the internet?
Yeah.
There are many cases of people putting up a MySpace page or something similar and saying something along the lines of, man, I partied all weekend, I was drunk as a skunk, and bad things happen.
Maybe using more up-to-date phrases than drunk as a skunk, but...
Well, it depends who you are, but...
Quiet, whippersnapper.
How dim-witted do you have to be to think that posting something on the internet is not going to result in people on the internet reading it and saving it and looking at it again and spreading it around? That's what the internet is.
People Google you. It's now a verb, and these people are starting to include companies. You can no longer safely keep your personas separate online because somebody will dig things up.
Okay, number eight, digital literacy. Encourage your children to be smart consumers of media and question everything online. How about questioning everything, period? That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Digital literacy? I would expect that to mean, you know, the grammar you're using in instant messages and stuff, which, by the way, has to be improved because...
I like this, what she says after this. No one monitors the internet. Anyone in the world can post anything. That's fact true. Or fiction. No, that's not true. Anyone in the world can post anything?
Well, anyone who has access
to a computer. I know a lot
of
people in China that would disagree with that.
Ah, okay.
Except they can't post about it.
How many of them exactly do you know?
All of them.
All right.
Number 9, be a fair user of information. Discuss with your children the importance of appropriate use of information. If they use something they find online for a class project, cite the source. Otherwise, it is plagiarism. All caps, she said, so I had to yell that out. Discuss with them the importance of downloading music, videos, and other media legally.
Right.
So I guess, you know, she's sensitive to the downloading of music and videos.
Is that the only all caps?
Those are the only two instances of all caps, so she's obviously very passionate about that. Okay, number 10, finally. The last of the 10 tips to make sure your family is internet smart from Hillary Clinton. Use internet protection. Decide, it's not funny, decide what software and protection devices are appropriate for you and your family. A firewall, virus protection, secure passwords, etc. Oh, secure passwords, they're not necessary. Yeah. When are secure passwords not necessary? Never download, quote-unquote, free software. Now, come on.
I don't like that one.
Come on. That's the dumbest thing I've heard today.
You have to know your source. It's like saying never have relations with anyone, I'll say for the want of a better word.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. Thank you.
No, but it is.
Anyway, scan your attachments first. Remember, while technology can help protect kids in cyberspace, nothing takes the place of open communication and understanding of what they are doing. The thing is, with this mentality, you wind up paying for a virus because someone's charging you for it. It must be legitimate. Something free, though, can't be good.
That's a good business model to be in.
Well, it's a good business model if you're selling something on the internet.
Any of our listeners who wants a virus, you know, $10, send us, and I'll send you one.
Oh, boy.
And Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie.
I wanted to point out, apparently Hillary Clinton doesn't understand the meaning of the word plagiarism, which is passing one's own work off as their own, someone else's work off as their own. And I think downloading copyrighted works, unless you're representing it as being your work to someone else, that's not plagiarism.
No, she's implying that if you don't cite the source, you're claiming that it's your own.
Oh, okay.
I guess.
I thought she was referring to music downloading.
No.
Plagiarism.
No, that was before she got into the music part.
Well, it's actually a very clever wording in a sense, in that she's sort of combined the two things into one, where she's saying plagiarism, which we can, I think, all agree is a little bit shady, and she's sort of saying it in the same breath, in the same all caps, as copying something, you know, against someone's notion of copyright law, which is really kind of a very different concept.
Okay, continuing along with our holiday theme, apparently there is a big problem with consumers receiving gift cards all across America. Shoppers are receiving these things. They're tucked away in envelopes, drawers, wallets. And some of the nation's largest retailers are profiting from these as a result because people aren't using them. Last winter, Best Buy reported a $43 million gain in fiscal 2006 from cards that hadn't been used in two or more years. And apparently they expire after a certain amount of time. So if you get a gift card, use the damn thing.
It's a stupid concept. I mean, why would you give someone a gift card instead of cash? You're converting your cash into cash that can only be used at one place and expires.
Well, it's kind of tacky to wrap up cash and hand it to somebody.
They have cards designed for this, you know, with, okay, tacky sayings. But they're
still cash.
Yeah.
Send a check.
It's easier. I don't know. If you just give somebody money for Christmas, I don't know.
But that's what you're giving them when you give them a gift card.
It's true. But you're sending them to a place that you supposedly know they like to go. And maybe that makes all the difference or something.
Send them a Commerce Bank Visa card. No fee. And it can be used for almost anything.
Are you reading commercials now over
no,
our
No, no, no. But it's the only like one I know that's
one.
No fee.
Sure sounded like one.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Let's go about gift cards. Another thing that isn't mentioned in there about gift cards is there's a hack for it, and a very low-tech one, and you know that those are my favorite types. Have you heard about this, the crime that's going on? Apparently, you go into many a store, Rite Aid, Walmart, whatever, and they have various gift cards stacked up on the walls, and you're supposed to buy them, take them to the register, have them activated after you pay for them. Well, crooks are going over, writing down the serial numbers, waiting a week or two or three, and then when they're activating, buying stuff online with these. An ingenious, low-tech hack.
Not Kevin.
How would they know they're activated?
You wait. You find out sooner or later online. If you can't use it, it obviously hasn't been activated.
Are all the numbers displayed on these things?
Ah, this gets even better. They used to be. And after this got publicized, in fact, Chuck Schumer, actually, the senator from New York, did it a couple of weeks ago.
The other senator from New York.
The better senator from New York.
Whichever.
after he publicized it, a number of them started putting on this gray goo that you see on lottery tickets and such. Well, it has the same problem that the original gray goo on New York lottery tickets had. You can take it off and put a substitute over it.
It's a lot more work, and you're going to do that in the middle of a store.
But isn't it wrapped up?
No.
Most of them aren't, yeah.
No.
This is one of the examples of something I can't believe they didn't think of this when they first made the things. It's so obvious.
A lot of the gift cards weren't allowed to be used online, though, back then, I don't think.
Uh-huh. Wow. It's just common sense, though. It really is. Something that's kind of related to this, gift cards, Metro cards. Remember the problem I had last week with my Metro cards? A listener writes in, pertaining to Emmanuel's MetroCard headaches, I want to tell you about a function of the MetroCard machine that used to exist but doesn't anymore, and it would have fixed part of Emmanuel's problem, but sadly they took it away. The MetroCard machine used to allow you to combine the value on several cards all onto one new card. You could insert several cards one at a time into the MetroCard machine, and it would capture the value left on them, combine it all into one new card, and issue you the new card at the end. This would have solved the problem of what to do with stray cards found in pants and coat pockets from weeks earlier that each had a value of less than $2. I found it a useful function myself, but I suspect they took it away to stop scammers from doing something. We're not really sure what. Thanks, Karen in Queens, for writing in. Jim, any insight on that?
Yeah, that was something that ended when I was still there. Mm-hmm. And, Karen in Queens has it exactly right. Scammers would get cards that had some amount left on them that people would just throw away, because if you used them in a turnstile and they had less than one fare on them on a cash card, it would just say insufficient funds. It wouldn't say how much. It could be zero. It could be a dollar. It could be $1.95. You'd toss them. The scammers would take them, go back to
Wait. What's the scam? They're picking up something off the ground that has – it's like picking up a dollar. Is that a scam?
The TA rule says you can't do that.
No, the scam is the TA.
I agree with you.
The scam is the TA saying that it's insufficient fare without the amount. Now, a problem I had after the show last week, because I had taken a bus and I wanted to take a train afterwards, and I didn't know which MetroCard I had used that had a transfer on it. And you suggested – and I thought it was a good suggestion, go up to one of the MetroCard machines. It'll tell you when it was last used. Not correct. They only tell you that on unlimited cards. They don't tell you that on pay-per-ride cards.
Well, you could have gone to the booth.
I did go to the booth. The booth said, the computer is down. I cannot help you. So I had to gamble, and I gambled wrong, and I lost.
I'm sorry. Well, don't blame me for losing. I'm sorry that you had to gamble.
Jim, I have to blame somebody.
Thanks a lot.
All right, no problem.
Thanks a lot.
Another bit of news. This is sort of from a continuation of last week's discussion on FCC and licensing for ham. Apparently, as of December 15th, the FCC has indeed discontinued CW as a licensing requirement. Thanks, Matt, KC8BEW, for writing in and telling us that. Redbird, maybe you could tell us what that means exactly.
It basically means that now to upgrade your license to general or extra class, you don't need to take a CW exam anymore. Which is a shame. I don't think that's how it should be, but whatever.
Well, the days of Morse code seems rapidly coming to an end.
Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie.
For many, many years, decades, in fact, almost all of the last century, this was an international law. This is a pact that all nations had agreed upon that to license amateur radio operators in their countries, there would be a Morse code requirement for certain license classes. That was done away with, I think, in 2003. Is that right, Redbird?
Somewhere along, yeah. I don't remember the exact year.
So U.S. is actually following the United Kingdom, Canada, and I think another country who have already gotten rid of the Morse code requirement for amateur radio. I think it's unfortunate. They should have kept it for one of the higher license classes, but it is what it is. But it doesn't prevent anybody from learning Morse code and using it.
And this is something that we were alerted to by a number of our listeners. Apparently, there's a new service out there known as Craig's Number. And it's a way of getting an anonymous phone number if you're listing something, apparently, on Craigslist. And what I did was I went to the website and I basically created a phone number. I'm going to dial that phone number right now. Let's see if I hit the right button here. Hopefully, I won't lose you, Bernie. Let's get a dial tone. All right, and I'm going to dial that number right now. being very careful to turn down the phone so you don't hear the touch tones that I'm dialing. All right, and here we go. Hopefully it'll ring in a second and ask me for an extension. Oh, great. That's the BAI phone system not working again. Not hearing my special code. I'm going to try that number one more time. Yeah, no, it was down before. It's down now. There we go. Let's hope it works this time.
Please enter the extension number.
Okay, I'm going to enter the extension number.
After the beep, record your introduction. When you are done, press pound.
Okay, what do you think the introduction is for? Are we supposed to list something here?
Please wait while I connect you.
What? Oh, they're calling us. I see. Okay, I'm going to put this on hold. I'm going to wait for it to start. There it is. There it is. Wait, I saw something ringing and then it hung up. This is proof that our phone system doesn't quite work right because it's supposed to be dialing us now and I don't see it ringing. I saw it flash once.
The party you are calling is unable to take calls at the moment.
That's not true.
Please call back again.
Yeah, but you're
Goodbye.
Lying. No, but you're lying to us. You're lying to us. All right, well, what I can do is I can give out the phone number to our listeners, and they can try it themselves and see if they can reach us. Area code 415-234-5300, extension 929. That will reach this is great for our people who listen in San Francisco because they can call us locally now. 415-234-5300, extension 929 will translate to 212-209-2900. You have to give a little greeting or something, which is what they made us record. And we'll take your phone call here on the air. This will stay connected apparently for a week. So you can use it for other shows as well. And I guess we could really take advantage of this and I think they only give you number in 415. Maybe they don't let you choose different area codes.
No, I think there's three options.
Three options?
Yeah. But none of them are New York. So okay. Really, who cares?
Yeah. So I guess this is a way of if you're listing something and you don't want somebody to have your real phone number, you give out this number and they call that number and they don't know who you are, but you probably know who they are. I don't know if caller ID is transmitted. Anyway, give us a call. We only have a few minutes left to take phone calls, 212-209-2900, or if you're in California and want to try this new system, 415-234-5300, extension 929. What happens if you call a different extension? Let's give that a shot.
What should we say on the greeting?
I don't know. That's right. We have to sort of identify ourselves somehow. Okay, I'm going to hit this special code here.
Just give a station ID.
You know, this phone system is we'll try this off air because the phone system's battling me too much. Let's take a listener phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Listen, you guys must be kidding.
Please turn down your radio.
Yeah, I will.
Good, how are you?
Okay, what's on your mind?
You guys must be kidding about tipping the phone company. It's got to be a farce.
One thing, you must be a new listener, because one thing you should know listening to us is that we do not kid around. We don't make jokes here on this radio show.
Well, why would you tip the person who's dealing with your bills? You want to deal with the technicians that are delivering the service.
Well, I assume they know each other and they spread it around. They're all pretty friendly down there at the phone company.
Got to be kidding.
Well, I think that's a rather cynical view of the phone companies out there that are, in fact, allowing us to communicate right now.
Well, but they're getting well paid for that service.
Well, we'd like to think so.
Well, by extension, do you want to tip Con Edison people off?
Of course, of course. You notice that the lights are probably on and wherever you are right now. It's an important thing to have. So, yeah, you need to slip some cash to people in order to keep the services running. That's one thing we learned from Russia, right?
Your own bills, let alone tipping for services that are being charged for in the first place. They're not providing these services free of charge.
Of course not. Of course. I mean, your garbage man still charges you, but you wouldn't think of not tipping him at the end of the year, would you?
That's a different story.
Well, then. And make sure your tip to us is in the mail before tomorrow, because that way we can spend it before the holiday. Thanks very much for your call. And good evening. You're on the radio. Speak up, please.
Oh, hi. I had a question about our printers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not sure who I heard it from. Maybe it was the Steve Rambam conference, but... somebody said that they have like little dots in it so that they can track the model number that the printer it comes from.
Oh, interesting.
True.
Yeah, some of the higher-end color printers, which are capable of making copies of maybe money or other documents that look genuine because, you know, the quality of the printer is so high, do actually often print a sort of serial number in maybe a very light yellow color dots all around the page. Actually, a lot of these have been decoded already. There are documents online on how to do that.
Yeah, the EFF, and I believe it was Seth Schoen of the EFF, but it was definitely someone at the EFF looked into this and published how to decode your yellow dots.
All right, so it's not, it doesn't have that for like inkjet printers or low-end printers or anything. And can they actually track you down to the printer that it came from, the model number, or is it just to show you that it's not a money-making printer or something?
It's a unique serial number specific to your printer, which can be tracked then through whoever sold it to you.
What kind of bills are you counterfeiting? If they're no, seriously, if they're ones, they're not going to bother. But if they're like 20, well, 20s, they're not going to bother either. 50s and 100s, that's what you want to avoid. All right?
I just wonder, as it's a private.
Got to give out good advice here.
Is there like a free software for firmware to apply to a printer, maybe to take that away? Or
I don't know of any, but it's, you know.
Bernie, any ideas?
I know where I work, there's a Canon color copier, and the technician showed me once the code that was displayed in little yellow dots, and it is indeed tracked to the serial number of the print of the high-end color copier printer, which is registered with both the manufacturer and the government, and particularly the Secret Service in this case. So this is reality, and I don't think it's being done with the low-end printers yet, but we won't know until somebody follows up on that.
If, say, we were to buy one of these machines and, say, take it to someplace like, say, North Korea and use it there, I guess it would be easier, wouldn't it? I mean, the hardest part would be converting the power. All right. Well, you've given us a lot to think about. Thank you. Thank you for that call. Let's see who else is out there. And good evening. You're on the radio. Oh, dear. You missed your opportunity. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello, guys.
Hi. How are you?
How are you doing? Speaking of the cell phone tracking and stuff, isn't this the method that they use to do the high, extrajudicial assassinations in Russia and other places in the world?
Well, Arseny, you are a native Russian here? Or?
I'm a little bit confused about what he's talking about.
the cell phone tracking thing, when it's turned off and still they can locate the person and listen also to the conversations.
I think they often use guns to.
Yeah, but how do they know where to fire? They have to know where the person is. It's
exactly.
a good way to track down the person.
That's fire. What I'm saying.
Uh-huh. Sort of like a tracking device, a GPS tracker or something.
Look, why don't you hire more people? You know, spread the wealth around. If you're going to spend money on killing someone, you know, go the old-fashioned way. Get a few people to follow him. I mean, you know, feed their families.
I think the message that we get out of all this is that cell phones are just no damn good for anything because, you know, if they're not giving you cancer in your head, they're causing you to make enemies by talking too loud. They're exploding if Israel gets upset at you and makes it into a bomb. And now they can be used to listen in on your conversations by the FBI. It just seems like there's no good coming out. Plus, the people call you don't want to talk to. That happens, too, all the time. Okay, we have room for about one or two more. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hey, Manuel. Everyone else?
How you doing?
It's Brill over in England here.
Hey, how are you?
Not so bad. Full of cold, but
uh-huh.
I'll be
all
right.
Well, stay away from those cameras.
Oh, you got me. You got me images then.
Yeah, so what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to see what you thought about those pictures I sent on. I mean, that's the first thing I've ever... Sorry, that's the first sort of images I've ever seen like that of a police van in our country, certainly.
Well, since this is a radio show, you'll have to describe them for our listeners so that they know what they look like.
Well, basically, we've got our standard Ford... transit sort of vans over here that the police use, and the CCTV cameras, they are they tend to be dotted around looking for trouble or looking for speeding motorists. Normally they've got like sort of cameras in sort of just around the vehicle itself, but the vehicle that I saw yesterday had this antenna pole with a CCTV camera at the top, which was radio controlled because I saw it moving around. And it was the pole was probably about, I would say, about 10 foot on top of the vehicle. So it was absolutely huge. I don't know whether the photos are like sort of high enough quality for the magazine. I did take them with my phone, but I think the phone's a 3.2 megapixel camera. So whether or not it'll be sufficient to go in there, I don't know. But yeah, it was a bit strange. I didn't try shouting at it.
Well, now you have another thing to try. Bernie, did you have any reaction to this?
I saw the picture too. It was one of these. It looks similar to these broadcast vans that have an extendable, like a telescopic tower that goes up 10 or 20 feet with something on the top. In this case, it was a remote pan, tilt, zoom camera, which I think was controlled by wire rather than radio. But in any case, maybe you just parked. Was there anybody in the thing, or were they remotely viewing it from somewhere else?
Yeah, there was two police officers in the van itself. I didn't actually see if it was a telescopic, I didn't see it extend. I would imagine it would have been telescopic because I wouldn't have liked to see them driving under a few of the low bridges in the area.
Okay, guys, unfortunately we're out of time. Redbird, you have one closing remark on this?
Yeah, I think the NYPD is using something similar to this, weren't they?
Really?
Up in Harlem or something, they set up a stationary thing that telescoped up and, you know, had a cop up there with a bunch of cameras and spotlights.
Okay, we're going to have to go up there and check that out. But right now, we're unfortunately out of time. So I want to thank everybody for calling in and for writing to us. OTH@2600.com is our email address. And again, have a happy holiday. All seriousness aside, be sure to tip your phone company well and make sure that they're happy as we all are happy as well. Oh, one final letter. Just wondering what the ending song was for the December 6th edition of Off the Hook. We had a lot of people write in about that, so we're going to play it again tonight. It's comes actually from the remnants of the band that did the soundtrack to Freedom Downtime, and that was known as State Away of State. This band is known as Asobi Seksu, A-S-O-B-I-S-E-K-S-U, and the track is Rough Cut Number 1. That's how I have it, but I think there's another version of it out there someplace. We'll see you again next week, same time, same place. Have a good night.
right. Hey, I love that off the hook. I love that off the hook.